run into Badlands. Explain those Badlands. That's a hell of a name.
As Badlanders, you understand that heavy metals are affecting air, food, water, and our bodies. But did you know that there's a natural detoxification in the form of humic and fulvic acids? These acids bind to heavy metals, pesticides, and microplastics, and can even neutralize some radioactive substances. They are one of nature's strongest electrolytes, boosting energy in the cells, supporting gut and brain health, and supporting detoxification. Humic and fulvic acids work like tiny magnets, binding to these toxins and facilitating their removal. Check out this amazing testimonial. The most incredible benefit I noticed is that little magnets used to stick to me on my chest area and torso. From the heavy metals? I can only wonder. After 30 capsules of humic acid, they no longer stick. Ascent Nutrition's humic and fulvic acids are sourced from pristine American soil and may help your body eliminate these harmful toxins, since Ascent's humic is 20 times smaller than others on the market. Get your bottle today at badlandsmedia.tv/ascent and use promo code BADLANDS to save 10%. That's badlandsmedia.tv/ascent, promo code BADLANDS. Welcome to Vigilant News Interviews, everybody. For our guests today, we have Pamela Garfield Yeager. She is known as a truthful therapist. She's done some amazing work in helping people become aware of the trans agenda. Not only that, but the psychological side of it, the therapist side of it. And I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. Pamela, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you.
Good to have you. So I had the pleasure of meeting you at the premiere of Cut, Daughters of the West, the film that Simon Essler did. And that is a pretty harrowing movie, but really quite poignant, I think, to this discussion. So before we get into any of the issues related, I want to give you a chance to tell our audience about who you are, how you got into this, anything like that.
Yeah, so I'm kind of a rare breed. I'm a licensed clinical social worker that questions a lot of what mental health is doing, in particular with the gender issues, but pretty much everything. I really don't believe in any kind of identity politics or victim mentality, all of that stuff. About my background, I actually have over 20 years of experience as a social worker, but really with a focus in the mental health field. I was a clinical supervisor in school-based counseling programs in California for 10 years. Before that, I was working in group therapy programs and group homes, residential programs, mostly with teens and some with young adults. So I have a range of experience. And then, in 2021, there was a mandate that I didn't agree with. And I was watching how my profession was kind of going in the wrong direction. So I decided to become public because I watched my colleagues that agreed with me be very silent about it. So I felt like I had to be the one to speak up.
So it sounds like you were in the belly of the beast. You were in California. And if I remember correctly, you worked in New York for a while too. Is that right?
Yep. I was in New York City. I went to New York University to start my career. And I was actually there during 9/11 and did a lot of work around that. It wasn't so beastie back then in New York. But of course, it was still left-leaning, but just not as bad, because this was the 90s and early 2000s. So things weren't as radical at that point. I think it's only progressed since then. But yeah, then I moved to the Bay Area of California, Silicon Valley. And even then, so that was early, mid-2000s, you know, up until recently, I was living there and working there. It wasn't too bad until I actually I took a hiatus from my job because of a disability. And when I came back in 2021 was when I really saw how radical my profession was. And that was in Silicon Valley of California, belly of the beast.
Oh, yeah. Fascinating. Yeah, I think from a parent's perspective, I mean, I'm not one, but I'm going to hopefully be one soon. And just knowing parents, especially the ones that are, let's say, not as hip to these subjects as maybe we are. it can kind of seem a little shocking that this stuff is even happening. For example, I've tried to talk to some relatives I have about this stuff, and they just have like no ability to grasp it or comprehend it. Like, surely the school system is doing everything they can to help kids. Surely therapists are not, you know, hurting kids or anything like that. But can you give us like a little window into, you know, some of the things you are seeing and what the reality of therapy is, especially now?
Yeah, I mean, most people believe, like, teachers and therapists and even doctors, that, you know, for the most part, they net good. However, I'm not so sure, and I'll just talk about the therapists, simply because our institutions are so captured. They're teaching therapists to do all kinds of things that I would have never imagined back when I was being trained, or even throughout most of my career. And the most obvious thing that we're going to talk most about today is the gender ideology, which the therapists are being trained to keep secrets from the parents, from children's secrets from their parents. And they're being told to automatically affirm meaning just go along with literally everything a child says, as opposed to exploring what's going on, recognizing that kids, one, don't always tell the truth, but even when they mean to tell the truth, they don't know the whole truth, and you need to talk to other adults, and that there are other issues going on to, you know, explore what are the underlying issues. That's not happening anymore. And the fact that therapists are saying, yes, you're a girl or boy instantly, and then they have access to hormones and even sometimes surgeries as minors without parental consent, that is happening. That is real. I even was a part of a Project Veritas expose where they showed, it was in New Jersey, they showed a clinic where kids can go into the clinic with a quote-unquote trusted adult that was not vetted. So they can find basically a predator online to take them to this clinic and get hormones and surgeries without the parents even knowing. Wow. So this is all real. It is really hard to believe. And yeah, therapists are, I think a lot of them don't realize it, but many of them are egging this on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It seems as though, you know, there's so much preoccupation with work, your social life as a parent, there's just a million and one different distractions that just make parenting itself very difficult, let alone dealing, you know, being on guard for these things. So, you know, if to the parents who are listening, and this kind of ties into your book. So, by the way, everybody, you know, you wrote this book. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the book? And then we'll get into some of the things that parents should be on guard for about some of this stuff.
Yeah, so I have this Parents Guide to Mental Health on my website, which is thetruthfultherapist.org. I had a small little section there on gender dysphoria. That was the most popular one, and people kept asking me about it. So I was like, let me just print it out. And then I realized I had so much more to say. So this 15-page essay and program that I wrote up turned into a book, and it's called A Practical Response to Gender Distress, Tips and Tools for Families, and it's available on Amazon. And what it is in the title, it is a practical response. So it's a lot of things that are out there that people just, you know, without thinking or not realizing that people believe, because we hear it every day that affirmative care supposedly saves lives, that it's preventing suicide, that there's intersex, there are animals like clownfish, so that proves there are multiple genders. And I think a lot of people with common sense know this, but they kind of don't know what to say when someone says that, and they get frozen. So a lot of this book breaks down a lot of these myths and helps people understand how ludicrous many of this is and how shabby the data that they keep citing is. And then it goes into more practical tips on, one, how to talk back to a therapist that might try to blackmail you, because it was even shocking to me when I first heard about this, but therapists are trained to say, would you rather have a live son or a, now I'm getting it mixed up.
Dead daughter.
A dead daughter. Thank you. Now I'm blanking on it. Yeah. They're a trans kid or a dead kid. So they threaten, they make threats, and they're working overtime to tell parents that if you don't go along with this, your child will die. And it, it makes sense for a parent to believe in this because usually they're bringing in a kid who is very distressed. Oftentimes these kids have had suicide attempts in the past. These are the kids that gravitate towards this. So we have a vulnerable kid who's told, if you don't get this gender stuff, then none of your problems will be solved and you will die. So, and they're groomed to say these things from YouTube videos, from other professionals, and then the therapists are going along with it. Instead of the therapist who would normally say, okay, wait, let's back up. Let's explore what's going on. Let's talk about where you got this idea from. Let's talk about why you feel so uncomfortable in your body. I want to hear more. I want to know. They say, we have to affirm, and then they threaten the parents. So I have tips on how to talk back to a therapist. And one of the main things is ask for that data, because they always say data, and it's all BS. Right. There is no data. All of these studies have been retracted. And I put in some therapy language that you can kind of use against a therapist. You know, this goes against what dialectical behavioral therapy teaches, which is about you're basically threatening someone with suicide to get what you want, which will push people away. You know, it's emotional blackmail. So I go into all of that. I talk about pronouns, the harms of pronouns, because even people who agree with us, I think many of them kind of say, like, well, I just want to get along. Let's just do the pronouns and get it over with. And it's stupid, I know, but who cares, right?
Right.
Actually, it's a big deal, especially when there are children around, because you're teaching them that, you know, the truth is up and, or, you know, truth is all over the place and it's confusing. So it's harmful for kids. It's creating anxiety. They don't know what's up and what's down. So, you know, all these reasons why pronouns are a problem, and how you can say no to pronouns, and how you can maybe even encourage your child to say no to pronouns, especially if this happens at school or if they're in theater class, that's a really strong place, or if they get coerced to go into a group that does this, because a lot of this happens secretly. So you're going to have to kind of inoculate them. And then it goes into ways you can talk to a child who's already believes that they're trans or would like to be trans, and, you know, open-ended questions. So that you don't push them further in, you know, into the hands of these groomer type people that will only affirm, and remember that you are their family. And once they figure that out, they'll know that you love them, but you're not affirming this, because usually what happens when parents start out saying, I'm just going to go along with it. I just want my kid to be happy. I don't want to make waves, or I'm finally seeing my kid being calm for once, you know, so it's making them happy. And then they kind of get stuck in this hole because the demands get further and further. And they're, of course, more worried about the medicalization and the dangers and the harms of testosterone and the surgeries. So ways you can talk to a child in an open-ended way, and things you can do. So yeah, there's so much in there. And then there's a bunch of resources. And then I do this trans English dictionary, which is kind of fun. I had fun writing that up, and it really does translate this terminology. A lot of things that, you know, a lot of euphemisms that sound nice, really are not. So one example is top surgery, which is the double mastectomy. So, you know, they make it sound kind of nice and fun, but of course that's not really nice and fun. Just all of these different terminology that they use, so that I think they do this on purpose so that there's people kind of on the in and people kind of on the out, and that your child can say, well, you don't understand, Ma, you know, but yeah. If you do understand a little more and you understand what's really behind these words, it might help you communicate with your child.
Wow. I'm so glad that you included that, because, and I might be wrong about this, I just personally haven't seen it. A lot of people talk about the trans issue, but they don't really offer practical solutions for how to actually communicate with your child about it.
Yeah. There's one other book that has a little bit of this. It's also, I recommend it at the back. It's called When Kids Say They're Trans. That's the only other book I know of. It's also written by some therapists and people that I've actually learned from. And they run the agency called GenSpect, which is another good resource. But mine is a little more of an easy read. It's a little more approachable. It's a little less clinically driven. So I think for a family that's in crisis, that doesn't have the bandwidth to read a thicker book and go through all of the history and read more of the clinical stuff, I feel like mine is a little more accessible. But of course, I'm biased because it's my book.
It's time to visit your one-stop shop for all things patriotic, your patriotic store. At your patriotic store, you'll find the perfect gear to showcase your American pride. From brands you know and love like Grunt Style and Nine Line, to everyday accessories for your home, pet, and auto. But that's not all. Discover new brands you're sure to love. From the hand grenade hot sauce, to bold two-way glassware, to veteran-owned beef jerky and more. Shop for everything from flagpole kits to flags, and even Patriot tees for every day of the week. Your Patriot store is also the home of Buy Two, Get One on Us. Buy two shirts, get one free, coffee, hats, stickers, flagpoles. Buy two like items and get one free. And get this. If you use promo code BADLANDS35 at checkout, you'll get a huge 35% off your entire purchase. Don't wait any longer. Head over to badlandsmedia.tv/Patriot Store and use promo code BADLANDS35 to show your patriotism without breaking the bank. That's badlandsmedia.tv/Patriot Store. Promo code BADLANDS35.
Right. Well, I think, you know, there's a huge language gap when it comes to these issues. Knowledge gap, of course. But, you know, I think every parent at the core, even maybe some of the ones that are a little bit less present than they should be, want to do right by their kids and want their kids to be certainly safe and not a victim of yatricide or, you know, medical malpractice and things like this. So, you know, I wanted to touch on some of the warning signs for parents. So, like, you know, again, I'm not a parent, but having done a bunch of parent research, I ran a charity on the ACE study and men's work by the name of Dr. Charles Whitfield, who was big into parenting. There's a lot of things happening when as a parent, obviously. But what are some of the things that, you know, maybe you would, that would stick out for you as things for parents to look out for, and even some maybe preemptive tools that they could use to get ahead of this problem before it turns into my kids identifying as trans?
Well, one of the most common stories is a teenager who's going through something. Perhaps they went through a breakup. Perhaps usually there's some kind of sexual assault or an exposure to porn or something that really disturbed them, or a shift in their social circle, that sort of thing. Or maybe even something in the family, maybe an illness. And then they get absorbed online, you know, in a way to maybe cope. And they get really absorbed online. And then they maybe learn that their pain and the feelings that they're going through could be resolved if they became trans. And they see all these videos of all these really cool influencers that show what a cool time they're having. And they're really quirky and charismatic. And then they're told that they're in a safe place and that they can be their authentic selves, because if, you know, because the parents are telling them what to do all the time, they aren't letting them be their authentic selves. But the fun influencer says, well, I'll let you be your authentic self. So that, you know, they're watching all these videos and they're seeing, this kind of glamorized version of what being trans is. So somebody who kind of either hates themselves, hates their body, or is going through something, it can be easily lured into these trans identities from that. So the first thing I would watch for is if your child is spending an exorbitant amount of time online, and then they come out the other end, and then they're different, their personality is somewhat different, they're more withdrawn, a little less patient with you, start telling you that you're stupid for thinking kind of common sense things like men are men and women are women. if you have certain traditions in your family and they start to become rejecting of those things, but they were okay with it before, like that's a sign. So I think a lot of kids are told, well, your parents are fuddy-duddies and, you know, going to church is stupid and, you know, eating with your family isn't necessary. Like, you know, hang out with us instead, that sort of thing. Those are like, you kind of have to watch for if your child is just changing their behavior, if they start to, I mean, it's normal for every teen to go through sort of phases, to change their hairstyle, to change their clothes. But if you notice all of a sudden they're changing their hairstyle, they're changing their clothes, they're painting their nails differently, they're doing all these things, like those are things to look out for, because they seem innocent until they're not. Right. So, you know, pay attention to those things. I think a lot of parents dismiss it and say, well, they're just, you know, doing, they're just exploring. And it's okay if they're actually just exploring, but it'd be good to talk to them and not just let them be. I think a lot of parents are nervous about talking to their kids about these things, that they feel like they're intruding or that, you know, they're being in the way. I think parents have gotten a little, like, they're worried they can't intrude on their teenager's privacy, but they're still the parent. So to just look for things and to not ignore your gut feeling. If something seems different, something seems off, like, ask questions, and, you know, before it really snowballs, because it gets harder and harder once the child gets more embedded into it. Then it's harder to talk to them.
Attention, all you Badlanders with purring pals and feathered friends. Say hello to Love Litters. 100% pure, kiln-drying wood, free from chemicals, and oh so kind to Mother Earth. No dust, no mess, no toxins. Just a lightweighted solution that's gentle on your wallet and even gentler in your home. Our biodegradable litter is crafted from wood destined for landfills, giving it a new purpose in your pet's life. Cats love it. Our astounding formula works like magic to neutralize that notorious cat urine odor, keeping your home pine fresh and welcoming. For bird lovers, it zaps moisture from bird droppings, crumbling them away, all while being safe if pecked at or ingested. For reptiles and critters too, our mix is crafted to dilute the pine scent, ensuring those little lungs stay happy and healthy. Plus, every 30-pound bag of Love Litters will last up to 6 months, saving you money. Transform your pet care routine today. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/litter. That's badlandsmedia.tv/litter. And breathe easy with a litter that loves your pet as much as you do.
Right. It seems like there's like a pipeline or a funnel, really, where they've singled out a litany of certain target audiences that are more prone to this kind of decision after enough, you know, grooming, conditioning, whatever. And it's expansive. Like, it could be just kids who are, you know, gamers, or like you're the goth kid in high school, or somebody who's like, you know, considered like an other, like an outsider. And then this is something that's going to suddenly make them, you know, above everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
I mean, we know they do that with corporations, and there's all this data harvesting, so why would it be any different for another multi-billion-dollar industry, which is exactly what it is now?
Exactly. Yeah, and one population that's really targeted and heavily marketed to are autistic kids, or kids that you'd say are on the spectrum, kids that are social outcasts, that struggle socially, and they get their own flag, you know, and different products that are meant for our autistic kids, like headphones to help them with their sensory overload, or like the little fidget toys. A lot of them even have trans symbols on them. So, so that they're really targeted, and they're told that they don't fit in, something feels different, they don't understand how people operate, how they work, and then they think, well, maybe it's because I was born in the wrong body, and if I become trans, then I'll fit in. And then they're told that they're now part of this wonderful community. And honestly, people both in the trans community, however you want to describe that, and people, just regular people, they tend to tiptoe around you once you become trans, or, you know, give you more, shower you with attention. So when you do kind of flub socially as an autistic person and maybe say or do something a little awkward, you get more of a pass now that you're trans, because people don't want to, you know, they don't want to rock the boat there. They're scared, right? It becomes a little bit of an armor.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it seems like from a sociological perspective, culture throughout history has guided people's decisions. I mean, what's become iconic as part of being a parent is when your kid says they want to be a fireman, or they want to be an astronaut, or they want to be something. And part of the deeper psychological reason for them wanting to be something is that the process of them finding themselves, so to speak, and then reaching for that and cultivating that is not genetic necessarily. It's not like, you know, it's all just laid out and the kid's just going to progress through that. It's much more within their choice spectrum. And previously culture had very defined roles. I mean, men were women, men were men, women were women. And, you know, we had roles that were socially acceptable and roles that were not socially acceptable. And so when you step out of the social acceptable circle, you're going to all this very intense neurology, specifically the limbic system, is going to activate, make you feel like an outcast, and then drive you or push you into wanting to be accepted in some way. And so I was telling you the story off air of my wife. And my wife, when she was just starting to go through puberty, she went from, you know, being a girl that nobody really paid attention to in the sense like as being a woman to all of a sudden she's getting way more attention than she used to. And that wasn't necessarily all that comfortable for her. She didn't necessarily know how to deal with that situation, as I've talked to a lot of girls and, you know, women, and they kind of say there's that transition period. I'm sure you can speak to that being one yourself. And culture kind of is supposed to help in that in some sense. Like in Latin culture, we have a quinceañera where a girl is turned 15. Her father like gives her to the world and like embraces her femininity and the community rallies around that. Well, now that doesn't happen anymore, really not in any significant way. But now they've taken those cultural mechanisms and flipped it around. And now you are indoctrinated into a, for lack of a better term, a cult of transgenderism with all of the same perks and social validation and cred that comes with what we used to have 50, 60, 70 years ago. So it really does seem, it's certainly misguided, to put it in the best light possible, but the sophistication and the coordination behind it all seems like it's more, there's an agenda at work here. Have you, anything you'd like to speak to there?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. I agree with everything you're saying. And it's wild that all of this is backed up by all of our major institutions, all of our schools, all of our healthcare centers, all of the mental health is where that's my niche. In the past, you know, there were girls that used to cut, and they still happen, but that was more of a trend. And girls that had eating disorders, that became a social contagion, but never were the therapists saying, okay, let's go along with this. Like, this will make you your true self. Like, none of these disorders were affirmed. And trans is not seen as a disorder by them. Trans is seen as this inherent sort of identity that they're making it out to be a civil rights issue. That's why people don't like, that's why that comparison doesn't really work for someone who believes in the trans identity. So, but it still involves self-harm. It's just a new kind of self-harm. Mm. So even in my book, I quote a detransitioner. Her name is Preesha Mosley, and she's pretty public about this. So she has trauma in her past, and she did a lot of self-cutting, and she even had some pretty visible cutting scars on her body. And she said that when she got her double mastectomy, that the doctor just cut her with a more sophisticated knife. Wow. But it was the same thing. So yeah.
Well, speaking of detransitioners, you have some pretty cool artwork to share with us, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what's special about my book too, is it's not just my wonderful writing. I actually included many of the detransitioners, and I don't think this is an accident or coincidence, are very artistic. This tends to get the more creative, artistic type of person, a very expressive person. It's one detransitioner said in a tweet one day that trans in some ways is just artistic expression used in a way, that, an unhealthy way. If we could only just use this creativity in other ways, it would be wonderful. But anyway, a lot of these detransitioners are very artistic, and we're privileged to be able to see their art. So they gave me permission to print some of it in my book. So yeah, if you want to show some of them that.
Yeah, let's pull up some of that, because, you know, warning everybody, this isn't necessarily like your Sunday cartoon, you know, style stuff here.
Those are the table of contents. Yeah.
Let me switch it over. Well, while we're here, the table of contents has a lot of interesting things on it. Did you want to say anything about this before we move over to the artwork?
Yeah, so these are the different chapters. That's the first page, and there's another page. So the book starts out basically talking about the facts, breaking down, is anyone born in the wrong body? I don't say it explicitly in the book. However, I put in a lot of arguments to call that into question, to call that idea into question. There is no proof that anyone is born in the wrong body. And I even quote certain public trans people who I actually like and respect, no disrespect towards them, but they're even public about things that they went through or struggling with being trans. So they say that this quote unquote saved them, but then they also say that there are certain struggles that they have, and none of them have any proof that they've been born in the wrong body. They just do this to possibly feel more comfortable in their body. And I even call question to that. So, yeah. And then I go into why are the kids doing it? And that's one of the longer chapters where I list a whole bunch of reasons, like I just named earlier, like autism and trauma, all the media influence, and it goes on and on. The warning signs that we just talked about, all about the pronouns chapter, it really does break down how pronouns can be harmful for kids. And then I give practical responses on what to say, like when someone tries to prompt you or your child to do pronouns, like for example, to prompt your kid to say something like, why are you making me do this, or are we playing pretend now, to kind of and to prompt you to ask your child, like, what would they say in their own words, in a child's voice, and help them understand that making you do it is kind of a form of bullying. So, 100%. Yeah. And then these are the more practical chapters, like the action oriented ones, like how to talk to your child, what you can do, the co-opting of conversion therapy. So that whole section is about the word conversion therapy and how that terminology has been co-opted, because they're basically trying to use trans as a civil rights issue similar to the gay rights movement. Basically, they want to say trans is the new gay, but it is not. Because there is controversy about the people who are gay or not gay. Some of them have sexual assault in their past. Whether or not people are born gay or not, that's a whole other podcast. However, regardless, a person who is gay or decides to be gay, however you want to put it, they don't need to take medication or sterilize themselves to be gay. And they don't destroy their bodies, and Big Pharma doesn't profit off of them. So it's a whole different thing. They're trying to say, as a therapist, if I work with somebody who says they're trans and I start asking them questions about, why would you be trans? Why do you want to be trans? Or what made you feel like you were a boy or girl? Or what does it look like to be a boy or a girl? If I start exploring, making exploratory questions, they could call me a conversion therapist and I could potentially lose my license. Wow. So these are the things that someone who's not paying attention wouldn't realize, that there are actual, in certain states, there are actually laws about this. Mm-hmm. And it's that extreme. It's hard to believe if you're not paying attention to this stuff, how radical it's become, like under our noses. And then how to find a therapist that will still do this stuff despite the pushback, and the Trans English Dictionary that I was talking about. And then I have a whole list of a ton of resources, like all the websites, many other books that are written on this, movies, films, Simon's book, Simon's film is in there, as well as many others. So
excellent. Awesome. Our audience is going to love this, because we interact with our audience a lot, and we know firsthand that a lot of them are actually dealing with this. So I feel like they're going to really appreciate this.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So I guess now we'll get to the art.
Yeah. So here we have, I think Estella can talk to us about this one.
So Estella is a former trans man. She's never been a man. She's a woman. I met her actually online. I was telling you a little about her offline, but I didn't tell you this. When we first kind of interacted, it was a little bit of a fight online, that how you're commenting with someone and you start arguing. But then we both came to an agreement, because she was really waking up to the fact that being trans wasn't all it was cracked up to be. And what woke her up actually was all of the stuff with COVID and all the tyranny, and she recognized how much Big Pharma was profiting off of the COVID tyranny. So then she realized, well, wait a second, I'm injecting testosterone every week and I'm dependent on that. Who's profiting from that? I'm still a part of the system. And she was also having some pretty serious health issues. So that's what woke her up. And then as she She stopped taking the testosterone. She still went by her male name. And it took over a year to really decide to detransition and go back to her name, Estella, after being the male name for 9 years. Wow. She was in her late 20s at that point. She transitioned at age 18, and then she transitioned back at age 27. Wow. Anyway, this drawing is by her. She's very artistic. Like, as I said, a lot of them are very artistic, very talented. And this was a drawing she made of her first session that she had with her therapist, who was a trans woman, really a man, who she really believed later on to be a predator, a groomer. And you can see the body language in the drawing, how creepy it is. Right. And in the caption, it says how the therapist said to her, giggled to her, crossed his legs and said, "This will be therapeutic for both you and me." Yeah. Meaning it really wasn't about her. It was about the therapist and the therapist right. projecting his needs onto her. Or, you know, his values onto her. And you can see how she feels very, like, small, and she sunk back, and she felt very preyed upon. So, yeah, that's not an uncommon feeling.
Yeah, there's so much that you can glean from this. You know, if anybody's ever studied cults and the way that they work, it's very similar tactics. In the sense that you alienate somebody, anytime they step out of the cult programming, they're punished in some way. They're rewarded for doing something. And the cult needs members to keep the whole thing going. And it's very similar to this, to what's happening here in this picture. I mean, wow, shocking.
Yeah, I guess basically the therapist was recruiting a new cult member here. That's kind of what it looks like, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like that picture was so powerful. And at first, she gave me permission, obviously, to print it. But at first, she was like, "No, I don't. Can I draw a better one that less of a rough sketch?" And I was like, "But I love that it's a rough sketch because you can really feel the emotion. You know, it was very raw the way she drew it. I feel like that brought out the feelings more. If she made it more perfection-like, I don't think it would have the same emotions behind it."
Totally.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So in a sense, a parent can kind of, you know, if you're a parent and you're looking at this picture, not to say necessarily that you have your own child's pictures to look at, but similar themes of, you know, feeling alienated, I'm sure could give you an insight into, you know, some of this stuff.
Yeah, in that case, she was 18, and she went to that therapist on her own. There were some issues in her family, and, you know, some underlying issues going on that brought her there. However, just to the parents that especially now, because that was obviously 7-8 years ago or more when that happened, but now in school, the school counselors are very trained to be these soldiers to make sure that they, you know, affirm these kids. They believe that they're saving kids. So if your child is especially in any kind of public school, I would vet that school, find out if they have any kind of counseling program on campus and what the school counselors are doing. You might want to even tell them ahead of time, "I do not want my child seeing a counselor without my knowledge," because they will do that. Certain states, I know California, you are allowed to, a child at 12 and up is allowed to see a therapist without a parental consent. So they can do this legally, and that's how a lot of this transitioning happens. They transition behind the parents' back. That creates a lot of stress for that child because they're kind of living a double life. So I just put out a warning to parents, and you might want to, even if nothing's wrong, just sort of do a little prevention check on what's going on with your child's school and what the school counselors are doing.
Excellent. Yeah, great tips. So let's move on to this other one here by, I believe, Chloe Cole.
Yes. So Chloe Cole, she's one of the more prominent detransitioners. She's been on every major conservative outlet, and she's been very outspoken. She's very passionate because she was transitioned as a minor. This picture is basically her talking about how she felt like her womanhood was sort of attacked, her femininity. She had a double mastectomy at age 15, and she was put on puberty blockers, I believe, at age 12 or 13 when she was young. Puberty, she was a rare case because they put her on puberty blockers and testosterone simultaneously because they really don't know what the heck they're doing. It's all an experiment.
Right.
And this was through Kaiser Permanente in California, which she is now suing. And this is a visual representation of the pain that she was. I think she's done some healing since she's drawn this, but you know, the pain that she felt, that she felt like kind of her femininity was taken away from her.
Yeah, it's remarkable. There's a caption at the end.
Let's see. Yeah, it's hard for me to read it from here.
I'll read it. It says, 19-year-old artist Chloe Cole started puberty blockers and testosterone at 13 and had a double mastectomy at age 15. In her words, quote, "I find it incredibly difficult to convey through words how lost or violated I really feel. I can say visceral things like I lost my womanhood before I had it over and over again. But I don't think a sentence can capture anything quite like art does." I couldn't agree more. I mean,
yeah.
It's so much communicated here. So,
and then the original drawing actually was in color. So those black spots were red,
right,
which makes it even more visceral.
Yeah, 100%. And then we have this last one here. Tell us about this one.
So that's drawn by another very creative detransitioner. Her name is Luca, and she's 22 years old now. It really is interesting how different they all are in terms of what happened to them or how they were treated, because again, this is all an experiment. She never even started testosterone, but at age 15, I believe, or 16, 15 or 16, she said she got her very first surgery ever, and that was a double mastectomy.
Wow.
Simply because she was uncomfortable in her body. She's been public about this. She was on several psychotropic drugs, and she felt very dissociated from her body because of certain mental health issues she was going through. And so she thought, well, she was born in the wrong body, and they instantly affirmed her and gave her surgery. And then later on, after that, she started testosterone. And she's suffering from a lot of physical effects. Namely, she talks a lot about joint pain, like aches and pains in her body. But she has really come around a lot in terms of her life psychologically. Seems like she's really comfortable in her skin as a woman. She's beautiful. All of these women actually are gorgeous, beautiful inside and out. But she would self-describe herself as a tomboy. That's basically what she was, a tomboy that had some mental health issues and I think some trauma in her history. And instead of having those things be treated, she was given surgery and hormones.
Wow. Yeah, it seems as though, you know, having somebody to influence somebody who's going through these questions was big. I was mentioning my wife earlier, and I forget exactly what the thing that happened, but she found a way to embrace her femininity. And then it's like all of that angst she had felt as a result of the transition she was going through, it kind of like reinvested itself in her new, you know, sense of her femininity. And then she felt monumentally better and continues to this day. So,
yeah,
well, that sounds like,
go ahead. I was gonna say about all three of these women that do these drawings, they all believe wholeheartedly that they were boys and men, but they're all very, very embrace their femininity now. In fact, like Chloe, for example, she's been outspoken. She really longs to be a mom. She's only 19 now. And when I was 19, I didn't think about being a mother, but you know, they really long for that. Cause I think that stuff has been, I don't know if it's been taken away, but at least it's been at risk. So I think they now appreciate their womanhood even more than the average girl or average woman would at this point, which is an interesting switch.
Do you know if there is a reliable source somewhere that will give you the statistics, like how many people who've transitioned have detransitioned? What's the suicide rate for people who don't transition versus the suicide rate for people who transitioned but then had to detransition but was permanently damaged? Is there any place, like a hub, for that kind of information?
No, that's the big problem. I actually mentioned that in the book because they quote this statistic that only 1% of trans people detransition. They like to say, like those drawings, oh yeah, fine, that happened to those women. Okay, we'll acknowledge that, but they're rare, and don't tell their stories because that takes away from all our trans joy. And those things are rare, but the truth is nobody knows. There really isn't that data. Nobody on either side really knows. They can't track who detransition, because most of these detransitioners do not go back to their doctor. So there's no follow-up. So there's no way to know who detransitioned. When they do go back, then they get turned away. There's no medical code for detransitioner. So a lot of these detransitioners will say in their charts, they still show that they're trans. So there's no way that they're tracked as detransitioners. We literally have no idea. The only one, it's not data, but the only one little indicator is that there is a pretty large Reddit group called DTrans, and it has over 50,000 members on it. Wow. So that shows that, you know, there's a significant amount. We don't know if all those people on there are detransitioners, maybe lurkers, or you can't know. That's not a reliable source in terms of data, but it just shows that it's not just one or two people, or, you know, a handful of people. There's certainly plenty of people out there, and more of them are coming public. But there are plenty more for every one. There are, I can't tell you the number, but plenty more that are not public, because most of them do not go public, because it's a very embarrassing personal thing to go through.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I haven't done nearly anything like what somebody who becomes trans has done. I've done my own really stupid mistakes and, you know, wasn't necessarily too happy about having those things become public, but nothing like this. So, you know, there, unfortunately, well, fortunately, I should say, I'll say it this way, because of Chloe Cole, because of these detransitioners who are willing to kind of put themselves out there, there is that cultural icon. And because of that, a girl who hopefully, or boy, who hopefully is, you know, a little bit more, dedicated to doing a little research instead of just validating their suspicions, might encounter this information and, you know, be a little warned. Because I'm imagining that when somebody is susceptible to this influencing, but they're getting groomed by their counselor, they're getting groomed by videos online or Tumblr or whatever the grooming's coming from, they're shielded from the kind of harsh reality of what transitioning is about. I mean, that's one of the things that was really shocking by watching What is a Woman, and as well as
Cut,
because you know I knew they were detransitioning. It was hard, obviously, that, you know, their parts of bodies are missing, but to the extent that the health issues linger after that, it's pretty remarkable.
Tired of the endless cycle of buying and tossing those paper tree air fresheners? Enter AeroTags, where their dream was to craft a solution to this very problem. AeroTags are the first ever laser-engraved, resentable car air fresheners made right here in the USA. Born in the makerspace of the Cleveland Public Library, AeroTags is not just a business. It's a revolution, a testament to the American dream. They are not just about freshening your space, but about doing it better, with a commitment to longevity, aesthetics, and sustainability. AeroTags are designed to last longer, look great, and reduce waste, replacing those fleeting scents with something you can count on. Don't forget to grab your Badlands Media AeroTag, now available. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/AeroTags. Spell out AROTAGS. And use promo code BADLANDS for 10% off your order. That's badlandsmedia.tv/AeroTags. Promo code BADLANDS.
I didn't know about that either. That was part of my wake up. I just thought, oh, you know, it's a little lower voice and a little extra body hair, right? It's not great. It's those things are uncomfortable, but you don't realize the breadth of health issues that happen, and the amount of pain that they go through, ovarian cysts and really painful periods. Once they finally get their periods back, they go through what they call a chemically induced menopause. Like Luca, I've quoted her in the book talking about how she struggled to sleep because she would wake up early in the morning with hot flashes. You know, she's in her early 20s. Wow. And there's blood clots, there's cancer, there's, you know, there's all kinds of complications that they all struggle with, of course, infertility. So they have pain in their throat and their voice from talking. Like they get their larynx, is that the word? The
larynx?
Voice, larynx, thank you. It gets enlarged and then it creates pain. So talking hurts. A lot of them have trouble talking for too long. So their voice is literally taken away. I mean,
wow. Yeah, I mean, God, I forget what I was just going to say, but did you have anything?
No, I'm just like kind of trying to digest all of these.
Yeah, it's so much, it right?
Bad. Yeah.
You don't realize how bad it is. And I mean, then there's a lot of embarrassing things. It's hard for me to talk about, quite frankly. And then when you talk about the boys, you talk, if we get into the puberty blockers, which you know, the trans activists will say is reversible. And in that, what is a woman? The lady was like, oh, it's like a tape recording. You just rewind the tape and fast forward and it's fine.
It's wild.
And it's wild that they believe in that. But no, a boy will end up with a micro penis. They won't. And if you actually look into Jazz Jennings' story, who had the what they call the bottom surgery or the surgery on his genitals at age 17, so a minor, by the WPATH president Marcy Bowers, who was in that film, I don't know how many redos there were, but there were several complications because Jazz Jennings was one of the first kids to get on puberty blockers at a very young age. So the penis never developed large enough to be able to create the surgery to do it, which also just creates tons of complications. So yeah, there's a detransitioner, his name is Richie, and he is so blatantly honest about what he's been through, talking about this really horrific bleeding and having to wear a diaper and smelling like urine as a young man and you know, just terrible things that they went through that you don't think about because you just see online how like cool they look and they've got like fun hair and they, you know, some of them have muscles and they're doing cool stuff and, you know, they have the little flashy Instagram reels, but, you know, in real life, they're in pain. Right. Even the trans people are in pain. There's sort of this masochistic quality to it. Estella would tell me about that behind the scenes. She would compare it to drug addicts, how when they would inject the needle, how big and thick that needle is, that it was this almost like a ritual of self-harm to induce this pain that you need to do this, like, you know, to show your dedication to the cult and to yourself that this is important, and you just be harming yourself every week, 2 weeks. I'm not sure how often you have to do it. But she said she would have phantom pain after she stopped because it was that intense psychologically.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, recently Joe Biden declared Easter as the Trans Day of Visibility, I don't know if we mentioned it live or not, but we were talking about the whole Jesusonian like resurrection concept that the trans community embraces. I couldn't help but notice the connection there. Did you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, it's not a coincidence that the Trans Day of Visibility is on or around Easter. To clarify, it was that date before this year. So that's been on the calendar through, you know, but from obviously more fringe, it started, of course, these things started more fringe, I think started in 2009 and has become more and more mainstream. It was even last year. However, the president didn't make a big declaration and a statement on their website about it. I do think that was intentional to do it because it happened, March 31st happened to land on Easter Sunday this year.
Election year too, probably.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. But the trans, I just read the book, The Queering of the American Child, by a man named Logan Lansing, who is connected with James Lindsay from New Discourses. And in that book, they talk about the religious aspect of this. That is, it really is a religion for them. And when you become trans, they see it, this is written in their writing, this is not my words, that you see it as, they see it as a resurrection. So the fact that they're having Trans Day of Visibility on Easter Sunday is not an accident.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't. The connection just, that's smart for me where it really dips a firm toe into, you know, a greater conspiratorial perspective. Because, I mean, you don't have to be a deep researcher to see that all these arrows seem to be pointing in a certain direction. Like, what happens to our culture as a result of these programs being initiated? Well, we got a lot less people being born. What are the things that the globalists are interested in? Reducing population because they think we have a population growth problem. So, you know, and that's just the tip of it.
Yeah. Also, yeah, it's just, I think it was 2021. It finally became a multi-billion-dollar industry.
So right.
There's, Plenty of incentive.
Lots of money and power.
And it's also, like we said earlier, it creates a target audience. And now that you have these people locked in a group think, it's easier to kind of like steer them in a direction, which is kind of like
a voting block too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's the destruction of the family on so many different ends. So you're sterilizing an individual. You can look at that, especially if you're realizing who they're sterilizing, people with disabilities, people with mental health issues. You can look at that as a form of eugenics. And then they're splitting up families that exist. So they're telling kids that their parents who have questions about this are the enemy and that they shouldn't talk to their parents. There's a lot of estrangement within families among young trans people and their parents, and the trans community encourages that. So they're destroying the family from all ends. And then the other industry that I think a lot of people don't think about, and I didn't think about this, is the fertility business. So big fertility really benefits from this because we're basically sterilizing people or almost sterilizing them. So now they have to get more fertility treatments or they have to freeze eggs or that sort of thing. Wow. And then there are a lot of ethical concerns at play there too.
And I guess all of the other problems that stem from it too are just fueling the medical mafia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we know fertility creates a lot of problems. They use that drug Lupron that they're using as puberty blockers also to harvest eggs. All of these things create a ton of health issues, including cancer.
Yeah. There's a doctor, Dr. Christine Northrup, who has a book. I think it's Women's Health, A Women's Way or something like that. It's a tome. It's like 800 pages. And one of the things that was in it that I found really interesting that relates to the kind of family and culture dynamic is that, first of all, it's been known for a while that if a girl does not have enough genetically similar males in her life, it's more statistically likely that she'll go through puberty earlier on in life.
Huh.
The opposite is true for boys. Yeah. So if there's not enough males in around him that are genetically similar, his puberty will be delayed. So there's that little piece. And then the other piece is that, apparently, Dr. Northrup has made this observation that when a woman doesn't have the support she needs for her period, or she denies her own femininity, that it makes it harder and it causes hormone dysregulation. And just simply creating a safe space, not to use that term unwittingly, for a woman to have that time when she needs during her period, if she does that, it'll greatly reduce the hormone dysregulation. And just as an example, as an anecdote, I started doing this with my wife a few years ago, and it was remarkable. She would have really intense cramps the day that she had to go do some work thing or something like that. And if we just took the time to be like, well, hey, you know what? You're going to have your time. I'm going to do this. I'm going to fill in as whatever ways I can. Within minutes, her pain would go away. It was remarkable.
Wow. I should try that.
So, the reason I bring it up is one, just to alert people to these things. But the other thing is that there's way more subtle influence than we might think about these things. Yeah. So,
well, the big influence I think about girls, there was just a Epoch Times article that I wrote, published this week, yesterday, today, that I wrote about how girls are being taught to fear their bodies, to be afraid of puberty. There's this really icky graphic on Planned Parenthood with like a bloody pad and a bloody tampon. There's a lot of that kind of imagery around. That book Genderqueer has really nasty period images, and if I were a young person about to get my period, I'd be freaked out about all that. And I mean, me as a Gen Xer growing up, I didn't have any of those images. I wasn't told to be afraid of it. I mean, I was told about it. I had kind of a liberal mom, telling me about getting my period, but not in a way to be afraid or to say how horrible and difficult puberty is going to be. Even people who agree with us on this, that a lot of, especially the women, I think a lot of them went through a tough period. So they kind of predict that puberty is going to be so hard, and it is hard for a lot of people. However, if you tell a kid that puberty is hard no matter what, then they're guaranteed, I think, to have a harder puberty. But if you just say this is something that we all go through, and if it is hard, I'm here for you, then instead of making it into this whole thing, I mean, a lot of times when I grew up, honestly, I had a late puberty and I felt left out. And my peers were kind of enjoying like their new body. Now, because of porn and, you know, more sexual assault and all of these sexualized images, you know, a lot of young girls, they're hitting puberty earlier. They're not ready for their bodies, and it is difficult for them. But then they get this message that puberty is traumatic, growing up is traumatic. And so even before they hit that, they're already ready to be afraid. And I think that's a very unhealthy message.
Yeah, 100%. Well, there's no shortage of awesome things to talk about. I could probably for another hour or so, but we should probably wrap it up. So the book is, go ahead and tell everybody what the name of the book is again.
Yes, A Practical Response to Gender Distress, Tips and Tools for Families. And I wish I named it simpler.
I need a fancy acronym or something.
Well, it's kind of interchangeable. You could just call it gender distress, or you could say the whole name.
Yeah.
I think when you Google it, though, or, you know, search for it on Amazon, you need to put in a practical response, because there's so many books that start with the word gender that it'll get mixed in. So, yeah, I need to, I should have thought of that. I didn't think about the whole search engine thing.
That's a whole other side to the game for sure. So we'll have, if you're interested in this, go to the Truthful Therapist website, which we'll have in the links in the description. It's thetruthfultherapist.org. We also have a link to the book. They'll just show everybody what the website looks like. There it is. So we'll have links to the book. We're having a link to the Truthful Therapist website. And as you were mentioning, there's a bunch of great resources on there under the resources tab, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah. So yeah, under the resources tab has some of the websites that I already mentioned and some other ones. It has some lists of therapists that, you know, are like-minded, that won't affirm, or even if it's not gender related, but just won't get into the identity politics or associate everything into victim mentality or judge someone by the color of their skin. You know, all those more radical ways of thinking. Unfortunately, a lot of the therapists today are falling into that and not being very therapeutic. So some of that ways to find those people are in the resources tab.
Excellent. All right. Well, Pamela, I really appreciate you coming on. Please come back again anytime to talk about this or anything else.
I'm happy to.
Looking for more ways to support Badlands Media? Head over to badlandsmedia.tv and click on the Support Badlands button, or go straight to badlandsmedia.tv/boost. You can now give a Badlands boost just like a Rumble Rant, only better. Support your favorite shows with a boost anytime, even if you're not watching live. Your donation will go directly to Badlands with no middleman. Shop America First Companies at the Badlands Shop. With every purchase, you'll be supporting Badlands Media and an America First business. Don't forget to become a Badlander. Opt in to be alerted to new shareable content and be on our street team. And by all means, click on that thumb. Help your favorite Badlands show reach the top of the Rumble leaderboard. Thank you all for helping us grow Badlands. We are the news now.
Thank you so much for joining us, and don't forget to hit the thumbs up on this video. And a special thank you to all of our advertising partners. Please remember to shift your dollars to support those businesses that support Badlands Media.